B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
Guitar legend Uli John Roth joins me today on Talking Rock. He has an hellacious tour schedule coming up with all sorts of dates. We talk about that, celebrating his 50th year on stage. Also, his chance that he got to see Jimi Hendrix, not once, but twice, and almost meet the legend.
The meeting, I wouldn't say. I was specifically right next to him at one point, but I didn't dare to say anything because I was 14 years old, and he seemed like in a different world.
We talk about some shows he did in January with fellow Scorpion Rudolph Schenker and why those shows were so special. Plus, he talks about his new music that he's working on right now and if it will ever see the light of day.
I have written a new studio album, but I find it difficult to record it because there never seems to be enough time, you know, and I'm pretty slow in the studio.
We talk about the Scorpions, the G3 tour he did last year with Joe Satriani and John Petrucci, as well as the Scorpions Revisited Record Store Day album that's coming out, and a ton more with Uli John Roth today on Talkin' Rock.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
As always, a big thank you for checking out the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. And apparently it's just Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. No Al Beck around for the second podcast in a row. I don't know where he is this week. I don't know. He just takes off. Now, see, he, you know, here in Detroit, he works in the morning show. And then he kind of sticks around afterwards and does some different things. Then he comes on and does the podcast with me. But I haven't even seen him this week. I don't know if he still works here. Anyways, I was going to try to get somebody else to do some rock news, but I guess we'll have to scrap it again for show number two. Anyways, we'll get back on the path, the right direction coming up again, hopefully next week. In the meantime, Uli John Roth, he's taking on, like I said, this really wicked tour coming up here. Wait until you hear him talk about the tour dates. You know, even some of the bigger bands, you know, listen, they have like, you know, different production and things like that. And these guys can't be putting up and tearing down stages every single day. So they need some time off as well. You know, days to get from city to city. But this tour is like, I mean, just city after city after city, day off, city after city. And it goes on and on and on. So anyways, we talk about that. His time in the Scorpions, even after the Scorpions, when they just blew up in the mid-80s, he talks about that. His new record he's working on, which may or may not see the light of day, is Sky Guitars, different things like that. So legendary guitarist Uli John Roth is my guest today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. And once again, if you like this podcast, please, by all means, go to 5-star rating, write a review, leave a voicemail if you like as well, 248-586-2988 with your feedback. And without further ado, let's get right at it. Uli John Roth today on Talkin' Rock.
Yeah.
Hey, good to hear your voice. How's things?
Everything's fine.
I was just looking at this this crazy schedule you have going on. Of course, you're probably resting right now, but this is a pretty intense tour schedule that you're going to be taking on, huh?
It is absolutely intense. That's the right kind of word, yes.
So you, for people that don't know, you have like 5 or 6 shows in a row, then maybe a day off, then another 5 or 6.
Oh,
I mean,
more than 5 or 6.
Is that right?
I mean, on the last American tour, we had like 17 in a row. That
wow.
was the record so far. But this time, it's pretty bad, too.
Yeah, yep. Do you like working that way? You like to get out there and just pound the pavement, meet the fans, and play?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I like the occasional off day, but yeah, I love to meet the fans and play. That's the bottom line. I still enjoy touring. It's physically hard and demanding sometimes, you know, lack of sleep and all that, time zones, jet lag. But on the whole, it's also very exciting, you know, keeps you on your toes.
Yeah, no question. So, it's cool. So, like, normally bands will go in there, they'll sound check, play their show and whatever. But you also on this tour, correct me if I'm wrong now, you're going to be doing, like, the sound check, then playing, like, a little show for, like, VIP fans, then doing this 90-minute set, then taking a break, then coming back out and doing more. I mean, you got all sorts of stuff going on throughout your day.
It's completely crazy, I know. But in America, you can do it because Americans are crazy, too. You know, it's the kind of audience see. In America, I like it. It's almost limitless. You know, I like playing there for that reason. No, joking aside, yes, what we do is we do a VIP pre-show concert, and that's very exciting for me because it gives me the chance to play my Metamorphosis concerto, which is something I haven't played in a long time. It's a very demanding piece of guitar work based on Vivaldi's Four Seasons. And time, we've got the screen behind us with the orchestra, and I'm playing in front of it with a couple of my musicians. So that's for starters, for the true diehards. Then the main show is basically a best of my 50 years in the music business. I'm starting off with a whole set of Electric Sun and some Transcendental Sky Guitar stuff. Then we have a little intermission, and then we're doing a best of my early Scorpion stuff with Cesar Chiron and Wilbur in the Sky on those tracks, and then a little Hendrix at the end, you know. So that's that. And then we do our usual meet and greets as well.
Yeah, so you got a full day. Man, wow.
I like meeting the fans because it gives me a chance to really see what they're thinking and, you know, what kind of response we get. I listen to what they're saying. It's very interesting for me.
Yeah. Now, if I'm not mistaken, and correct me if I'm wrong, so were you married to someone who had a connection to Hendrix, right? I'm sure you've seen Hendrix play before. You saw him live, right?
Yeah, I saw him twice.
Yeah. What'd you think?
And you're referring to Monica Daneman. Yeah, we were together for 20 years, but we weren't technically married. We were almost married. We were as good as married. You know,
yeah.
We loved her very much. She was a unique, very inspiring person. But I saw Jimmy twice in 1969 at the height of his powers in Hamburg. And then I was also at his very last show in an island in Germany just before he died. And I was lucky to have backstage passes. And I saw him from like the whole show from really close quarters.
Wow, so you got a chance to meet him and everything then, huh?
Well, meeting, I wouldn't say. I was physically right next to him at one point, but I didn't dare to say anything because I was 14 years old, and he seemed like in a different world in his mind, you know?
Yeah.
So I certainly didn't feel like he wanted to say, "Hey, Jimmy, how are you?" You know, I just didn't feel like that, you know?
Do you ever think about that when you're meeting fans? It's like they might think you're in a different world, and they might be afraid to come and talk to you.
Maybe, you know, but it was a very special moment for me, and it was special for him because it was his last concert, but he probably didn't know it at that time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I saw the final Soundgarden concert here, and that's always going to stick with me, you know?
So, oh, yeah, okay, where are you? Oh, yeah, in Detroit.
Yeah. So what kind of influence did Detroit music ever play on you, if any?
Not really any influence because I'm not even aware of these kind of scenes, you know. I was never a great listener. I mean, except for at the very beginning, I soaked up music like buckets full with the Beatles and Hendrix and Cream and all that, and then classical music afterwards. But ever since then, I stopped listening to music a long, long time ago because I feel like I've got enough making it myself. You know, it seems enough music.
Yeah, back in the 70s when you were the Scorpions and stuff, like, you know, Nugent and Alice Cooper and Bob Seger and those kind of guys were making hay right here in Detroit. So I thought maybe like perhaps a Nugent or something may have influenced you a little bit.
No.
No.
None of it. No.
So
I wasn't even aware of any of that stuff. No, I was also very guitar-driven. The stuff that interested me were always the bands that had the great guitar players in their bands.
Yeah.
You know, if there wasn't a guitar player, then I wasn't interested back then. I guess I wasn't mature enough yet. But that was certainly at that moment when I started out, I was very guitar-driven.
Now, you know, of course, we just talked about, you know, your big tour that you have coming up this year, your solo tour celebrating 50 years in the music business. But last year, you had a lot of dates as well with that G3 in Europe with Joe Satriani and John Petrucci. Tell me how that went.
That went very well. We had a great tour, and we got on very well as individuals. They're both very nice people. Mm. It was absolutely no clash of egos, and we were like a really good team on stage and off stage. So yeah, we all enjoyed that tour, and I think the audience did as well.
Now, recently, I think at the start of the year or something here, you played a couple shows with Rudolf Schenker, huh?
Yeah, that was just in January when we took this tour, this triple anniversary tour. We took it to Japan, and Rudolf was kind enough to fly in for the occasion and to join me, particularly for the Sun Plaza Hall show, which was the same hall that we had recorded Tokyo Tapes in 40 years. Yeah. So that was an emotional moment, and he also played the Nagoya show. It was really nice that he did that, and he brought a lot to the table. You know, he's still a powerhouse.
Yeah, I saw him with that flying V and stuff. That's really cool. You know, of course, you know, you were in the Scorpions in the early days, and you probably answered this question a billion times, but what kind of thoughts were going through your mind as the Scorpions? I mean, in the early 80s, like starting with like 83 or something, man, they just exploded. And I know that you left on good terms, and you kind of, you know, you guys thought you were going in different directions or whatnot, but I mean, just watching the Scorpions from afar just blow up across the world like that, what were you thinking?
See, I didn't really take any of that in. I was a bit of a recluse. I didn't even realize how big they got in America and the rest of the world until Winds of Change. Mm. You know, I left that behind me. When I left the band, it was on very good terms. And then that for me, that was history. I was just looking at what I was doing at that time, and it was a completely different path. So the success of the Scorpions kind of, you know, also it kind of bypassed me. But also, you were in North America, you know, of course, there it was the biggest there. In Europe, they were very successful, but not on the same scale as North America at that time, you know, until they had this Winds of Change, and everybody noticed, you know.
Yeah, okay, yeah, because when I was in, like, high school and stuff in the 80s, it's like you couldn't get away from, like, the Scorpions. They were constantly touring and all that kind of stuff, so, yeah, that's interesting. So, you know, are you working on any new music, or what do you got going on right now? I know that you've said before in the past that you're one of these guys that doesn't sit around and just, you know, work on stuff for years and years, but is there anything in the can?
I have written a new studio album, but I find it difficult to record it because there never seems to be enough time, you know, and I'm pretty slow in the studio. I'm such a perfectionist. What I want to do is this summer is record an album of acoustic songs, which I wrote for my 8-string flamenco sky guitar. You know, that's all finger-picking music, all very melodic, and I wrote these pieces last summer, and I'd like to record them, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a rock kind of offering, but it is what I like to do at the moment.
Yeah, and you seem like the kind of guy, whether it's rock or whatever, you just seem like you got music like that just flows out of you, what no matter what it is, right?
Well, I guess I like to see it that way.
Yeah.
and yes, true. You know, it's just, yeah, it's music. And and it's something the 8-string music, you know, the finger style stuff at the moment, I really love it. And I'm playing also some of that during our tour. I do a 15-minute acoustic thing, which I play solo.
Now, I want to give you a chance to plug your Sky Guitar. Is that just started up, what, last year or something?
Yeah, pretty much in 2017. The Sky Guitars are very important for me because it's, you know, my very own main tool of musical expression, I guess, you know. And we've decided to put them on the market, and they're basically like collector's items. They're very expensive. They're made to order, all handmade, and most of them are in Japan or America. Sometimes collectors, I mean, some people have four. Now one guy who's got four ordered two more. And also like really dedicated players, you know. So
yeah, the guitar has kind of an unusual shape, but then I see that you got that little plastic thing, that like lip that you can rest on your thigh. That looks kind of interesting.
Yeah, if you want to sit down with them, you can. You know, I prefer to stand up while playing. I've never really had the need for it, particularly when I play lead. But some people like to play when they sit down. So we came up with this leg rest kind of thing, which is there if they want it, you know. The guitar has to have that kind of shape in order to be able to reach the highest frets. That was the whole purpose of the Sky Guitar, to be able to go where no man has gone before on an electric guitar, you know, and that's why the shape had to be different from a traditional guitar.
Now, we just talked about the Scorpions. You got a cool record store day kind of thing coming out, Scorpions Revisited, on vinyl?
Oh, yeah, no, we did that in 2015.
Oh, that's old. Okay, I'm sorry. I must have had some bad news okay.
Yeah, I was quite proud of that. That's basically a two-disc kind of thing. Oh, you're right. Now it's coming out on vinyl. You're right. Yes, there is a limited edition. They just did that.
Okay.
Know?
Yeah, I thought it was this year, but you know better than I do. So
the recording is actually, I tell a lie, the recording was actually in 2013, and it was recorded in the same hall that Scorpions used to rehearse in for, during all these years. So it's got something special, and I like that one.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, my time's running out here. I got time for one more question here. You got the Token Lounge coming up April 14th, and of course, a bunch of tour dates. In the landscape of guitarists in the last 50 years, I mean, where do you kind of place yourself? And I don't even know if you can answer this question, but give me your thoughts on where you think you rate as far as guitarists in the last 50 years.
Yeah, that is a difficult question. I'd like to see myself as a pioneer and innovator and somebody who does things that other people don't do, if there's any meaning behind that. Express things that I feel inside in a way that I like to hear it. So in some ways, I'm playing also for myself, you know, for my own gratification, you know. And, whenever that resonates with people, it's just great. It's a great feeling to know that you're resonating with other people.
Well, you've resonated with a bunch of people, and of course, you shaped a generation of guitar heroes, especially kids coming up through the 80s and stuff, and we're looking forward to seeing the show. And man, I'll tell you what, you better get your vitamins in, because you got a lot of dates coming up here.
Yeah, a lot of dates, and today I have to do 12 interviews.
Oh.
I think you're number 6 or something like that. I'm halfway through. So, I enjoy doing that because it gives me a chance to connect with the audience, you know.
Well, we won't take up any more of your time. We'll get you on here with the interviews. Uli, thanks so much for the time. Safe travels, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you very much.
That was cool. Uli John Roth today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. I've never had a chance to meet him or speak with him before, so that's that was really cool. Looking forward to seeing the show coming up here in the Motor City, of course. Like I was saying before, if you're listening to this outside of the Detroit area, there are dates all over the place. And, man, just one after the next. Like he said, he does this pre-show VIP concert, then does the concert, then they do an intermission, then they come back out and play more songs, then they do an after-show meet and greet. I mean, it's just ridiculous. So, good for him, man, to have all that energy after 50 years in this business and still be cranking out and just ripping away on that guitar. So really cool stuff. Interesting thoughts, I thought, as he talked about, you know, the Scorpions in the 80s. And he wasn't, you know, it's kind of oblivious to the whole thing. And I guess, I guess I could kind of see that, you know, without the internet and different things like that. But nowadays, it's kind of tough to be oblivious to things like that, especially like a band you were in. And all of a sudden, they're like this worldwide sensation, never having been in Europe or, you know, Asia or whatever, you know, in the 80s. I I don't know, maybe the Scorpions weren't that big, but man, when I was growing up, you couldn't get away from them on the radio, and they were playing all sorts of shows and different things like that. Really nice guys, too. So anyways, if you like this interview, a 5-star rating, you can give it a review as well on Apple and iTunes and the whole thing, and I do appreciate those. Leave a voicemail, too. Sometimes you guys call. Actually, a lot of times you guys call. Don't leave a voicemail. You call 248-586-2988, and you hang up. Please, give me some feedback. Let me know what you're thinking. Let me know what kind of bands you want to hear from. And we've got some other cool ones in the works right now that I'm working on for upcoming episodes of Talking Rock. As always, a big thank you for listening. We'll do it all over again soon, maybe with Al Beck and more rock news. I don't know. Maybe I'll just fire him. Thanks for listening to Talking Rock.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.